Hi and welcome to Our Think, a podcast all about LGBT community and mental health. I'm your host, Lawrence Akers, clinical hypnotherapist in Melbourne. This week, we're chatting with Craig Mack. Now, Craig is a speaker, an ambassador for Are You Okay Day? And in this episode, he very kindly shares with us some tips, some suggestions about how to approach our friends when they seem a little off, when they don't seem to be themselves. Hopefully today's episode is going to help people consider how they can approach these conversations more openly, as well as to talk about his own story and what led him into doing public speaking in the mental health space. So with that, let's start our conversation with Craig Mack. So Craig, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
As an ambassador for Are You Okay, how much do you feel people get behind this concept of Are You Okay, this particular day?
I think it's confusing for some people that it's interesting because it's quite polarizing. You hear the discussions where it's pointless and it's superficial because it's only one day a year, and how much can asking a friend are they okay on one day a year actually help? I always say to that, like any event that you have one day a year, whether it's a white ribbon or breast cancer or anything else, it's about the awareness and it's about getting the message out. And it's then up to you to be having those conversations every day or whenever your friends need them. And the day, which is September 14, is just about getting the message out and getting the principles of how to have a conversation and why they don't have to be difficult and what they can achieve if you do. That's really what the day is about. And we spend, I know me and as an ambassador and a lot of us spend time during the day talking to all sorts of businesses and kind of run around. I think I spoke to four last year. And it's great. You get great conversations and great questions out of sharing the story and really opening people's minds up. That's the value of it, and that's what makes it important.
Why do you think so many people are hesitant to ask their friends a really simple question like, are you okay? What do you think is the fear that's hidden behind that question?
I think if you're going to ask a friend if they are okay, and check in with them, chances are you know that there's something that's not quite right. And a lot of people don't know what to do with that and don't know what to do when the answer is no. So there's that kind of fear and hesitation because, well, how do I handle it and what do I do? And am I prepared to have this big, deep and meaningful conversation that could be quite difficult? So there's that kind of fear and hesitation. And I think there's also a belief that you then partly become responsible for it because you've asked and sort of opened Pandora's box. None of that's actually true. And I think the value with Are You Okay is a lot of the time it's early intervention. And if you can get in and have those conversations with a friend whenever they need it, they don't have to be dark and difficult and long. They can just be out for a coffee and a check-in, and as simple as like, oh, hey man, I've noticed that you're not quite as happy or with it or kind of with us as you normally are. Is there something going on, or you know, are you okay? And it could be that they're just having like a bad hair week.
God, I know that well. Jeez.
I think they all do. And they can be relatively simple conversations that just show that you're present and that you're there as a friend. And it's a download of something that someone's been thinking. You don't have to have the answers to anything that's going on, because none of us do. The only person really who has the answers to whatever's going on is the person who's having them. And none of us are really mental health workers or psychologists or trained professionals, so we're not really the best person to be having those leading conversations anyway. But we can show that we're friends, and we can then sort of prompt people or check in to see what they are doing about it, and maybe encourage them to connect with other people.
Yeah. What about on the flip side of that, the people who are being asked if they are okay? You know, I guess they're probably going to have some challenges equally on their side in terms of do they share, how much do they share, and allowing themselves to be open and vulnerable, to put themselves in a position to potentially, you know, share some of those darker secrets that they might be carrying about themselves.
Yep. It's definitely just as fearful, I guess, is the word, or just as hesitant on the other side of the question to genuinely answer.
Yeah.
Because of probably all the same reasons. You know, you fear that you're going to be judged, or society has always told us, we've been built in, that we have to have our best face on, and that we have to be smiling, and that whole never let them see you bleed mentality, and we're supposed to be perfect.
Yeah.
And the minute that you say, no, I'm not, you're opening yourself up to that vulnerability. And I think you're also, it then makes it real the moment you say it to somebody else.
Yeah.
It's one thing to have it going on in your own head. But the moment you admit it to someone, it's then a lot more real. So, and somebody else knows, which means you sort of then probably have to do more about it, but are then accountable for it. So there's definitely the vulnerability. And there's an amazing talk by Brené Brown. It does a TED talk, and she's a psychologist who's a researcher on shame and vulnerability.
Yeah, she's done Daring Greatly, fantastic book.
Yes, amazing. And I'd encourage everybody to watch her talk on the power of vulnerability, because it really is something to embrace and is a superpower. Otherwise, it can control and destroy you because we let it. So it is very difficult on the other side. And you know, it may take 4 or 5 attempts of asking the question, or even finding the right moment or the right way to ask it, before the person's kind of confident and comfortable or ready to open up and say anything other than, oh yeah, I'm fine, or you know, I'm a master at deflection, and we'll make some kind of joke that has a meaning behind it, and it's just whether people pick up on that and what they do with it. So that's partly why the conversation's so hard, because there's fear and vulnerability on both sides, as much as both sides probably want to talk.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's funny you say about Brené Brown and that whole vulnerability thing. I think one of the things that she says is that people need to earn your trust, your I think she says your shame or something along those lines. And it's really interesting to think, you know, what kind of relationship do you need to have with your friends or your co-workers or your family enough to feel that trust that you can talk to them?
I think it's more a confidence in yourself,
yep.
I think, than in them, and a confidence that you know that you're not going, that person's not going to judge you or abandon you, and they're not. Most of the time, they're not. There are people who will run and think that you're a fake. Those people who are real friends are never going to run, and it's a confidence in ourselves to believe that. But on the flip side, it's also sometimes a lot easier to talk to someone that you don't know and it's completely objective. I think I have conversations with people at least once or twice a week who contact me through some form of social media, whether it's my blog or a dating app or Facebook or Instagram or wherever, either asking me for help from something that they're going through, or to help with a friend.
Yeah.
It's because they don't necessarily want to open up to somebody that they know for those reasons. And sometimes having that completely objective view is quite helpful, because you can just be like, well, do this and do that, rather than have that emotional investment.
Yeah. What do you think are some of the challenges, or I guess on the flip side of that, you know, some of the advice you'd give people to have a really supportive conversation when someone asks, or when someone says they're not okay?
Someone says they're not, yeah. This is where Are You Okay has the 4 simple steps to having a conversation. And on the website, there's one of the pages, it's called How to Ask. It's a really valuable and simple resource because it just gives you different ways to ask questions, different ways to approach things with different people as well, because we are all different. But the fundamentals to those four things are, firstly, you just have to notice that there's something wrong.
Yeah.
And it can be quite difficult to notice because we're sort of trained, or we believe that depression, mental illness, suicidal ideation looks like one thing. You know, the person who's sitting in the corner of the room in the dark crying or totally not with the world.
Yeah.
And that's not, it's far more complex because we're all through. It's really that change in behavior from what's normal is kind of the sign. So, you know, the friend that's normally loud and out there and friendly and bubbly and knows everybody, if they're suddenly being the opposite or just not quite being themselves, that's probably a sign that there's something going on. Mm-hmm. But in the reverse, the flip side's completely true. The introvert who is kind of always at home by themselves and pretty quiet, if they're suddenly on a podium in a dance floor or always out or always chatting, it could be a sign that there's something up.
Yep.
Because it's just a behavior change. You know, if someone is normally really neat and tidy and together and on time and really organized and kind of the opposite of me, and suddenly they're flipped and, you know, their hair's a mess and their diary's a mess and they're just not quite together, it's probably a sign.
Yeah.
But they can be so subtle.
Yeah.
So that's one. The first thing is to notice. Then when it comes to four steps, the first one's obviously to ask. And it is really, really simple. And it's just that, hey, man, like, what's going on? We've noticed that you're either not around or you're not quite being yourself, or you've been wearing a lot of black lately. You know, just wondering if there's anything kind of going on and if you're okay, because, you know, I'm here to talk and here to listen. So it's fairly simple from that perspective. And just showing there that you're a friend and you're around.
Yeah.
That can be one of the hardest parts, because it might take four or five times to get the person to truly open up. But the second one's to listen. And this is where active listening really comes in. So many times these days we listen to respond, or we think that we need to have answers or the solutions. And the best thing that you can do in those kind of serious conversations is literally just listen. And anything that you hear that you want to, that you think is a bit worrying, like, get the person to explore it a bit more with some more questions. But it's not about interrupting and having the solutions. It's about, so tell me what's going on.
Yeah.
And sitting back and not being afraid of silence, because that can take a while to, sometimes it can take a while to get the words out.
Especially, I know people who say, I actually have a person who says, I am sometimes afraid to speak because I can't find the right words.
Yes.
And they really struggle to talk because they're afraid that what they say is going to be misinterpreted or come out wrong, or for them, simply just not heard.
Yep. Or it's like, how do I say something that doesn't get misinterpreted, or that I don't like the sound of? So
yeah.
That's so you've got ask and listen. And then the third one is about encouraging action. And that's not necessarily about giving advice, because you don't want to ever tell.
No, absolutely not. Yeah.
Because every situation is different, so you can sort of empathise with what somebody's going through, but it's never the same. And the encourage action is more just about getting someone to think about what they can do positively to improve where they're at, or to change where they're at, or to change the mindset. And it could be really, really simple things like, you know, making sure that you're making a plan with them to go cop, to catch up, or that they're making plans with other friends as well and are doing things, or even just talking to people. I've got friends who send me like gifts and emojis during, if I'm hiding in a corner somewhere, just as the conversation and, you know, making sure I'm talking.
Yeah.
There's things like the 100 Days of Happiness that are really simple but nice ways to get back into gratitude and appreciating life a bit. I have a smile jar as well, which is kind of a similar thing. So it could be those really simple strategies of getting people to think what they can do. the other side, if it's more serious, go and speak to your GP or a medical professional, so that you can just check in and get some professional help if you need it. But it's, yeah, that encouraging action is then just making sure that people are doing something and not stuck and going nowhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and the fourth step is really simple. It's just checking in. And if you have been encouraging people to do stuff and you have kind of listened and know what's going on, that checking in is really easy, because it's just, hey, how's this going? Or how's that going? Or, you know, have you spoken to this? Or do you want to come out and do things? So it's just, it's those four fundamental steps that are just about being present and being a friend and making sure that people aren't alone in those times. And they don't have to be hard, difficult, deep, dark conversations.
Yeah, I guess it's just an understanding that people can go through difficult times, and to be able to empathize with that and to just explore with that person what it is that they're feeling.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And being around as a mate.
Yeah. You touched on before the topic of suicide and the fact that we aren't, or for many people aren't, mental health professionals. And so therefore, you know, that particular topic can be very confronting to them, can be quite uncomfortable. But if you do find yourself talking to your friend and you can hear perhaps suicidal ideation coming up in the conversation, how should that be handled? What can someone do there?
Look, I think if you get the sense of somebody has been thinking about that, or self-harming, or kind of on that real brink, one thing that you can do, I don't necessarily like this tactic, but it works with some people, to just simply ask, you know, have you been thinking about, or even doing, like harming yourself, or have you kind of been thinking about suicide? That's a really confronting question on both sides, and not everybody's comfortable doing it, and it's definitely one a lot of people wouldn't be comfortable answering.
Yeah.
But one thing, but if you hear it, I would definitely say something about that. Like that doesn't sound like you're in a really great spot, and it sounds like you definitely need some help to talk about where you're feeling and or how you're feeling and where you're at. And it's probably good to speak to a professional about that is probably the angle that I would take. And that's where I've got on my blog, there's a list of mental health organizations and places that people can contact.
Yeah.
Or to get referrals to different services, or you know, just to get a sense of who they can talk to. There's places like Lifeline. There's the suicide callback service, which is probably a step up from Lifeline in that more kind of emergency response stuff. For LGBT community, there's places like QLife as well that are all call and online chat-based services that are all staffed by mental health professionals and psychologists who are trained to have those conversations and lead people in direction. So that's where, if you do hear that tone, I definitely at least call it out in some way and say I'm really worried about that, or that really concerns me. I really think you should talk to somebody about that.
Yeah. What led you to become an ambassador for Are You Okay?
I have a history with suicide myself. I've had three attempts, one at 16 and one at 24 and 36, and depression is just, I call it the roller coaster.
Yeah.
It's just, I've managed my entire life since I was about 16, I think. So I've kind of had that experience with it, and it's not a story that I thought I would ever tell, particularly at length. It was about 2 years ago when the Are You OK Day campaign was on. And there was a friend of a friend who committed suicide. And it was about that eighth or ninth person that I heard of in about 18 months, just in the LGBT community. And I kind of, something clicked in me and just went, I have something that can help people, or I have experience in this, and something has to be done because that it just can't continue. And so I contacted Are You Okay and just kind of said, hey, I'd be interested in having a chat. This is sort of my experience. Would love to get involved. And then it sort of evolved from there. Pretty quickly, I did the ambassador training with them. And jumped out and started doing the talks and did it. And now it's about doing talks and jumping into the media and writing pieces for different media as well, and just continuing to get the message out.
That was what sort of things do you do then to help keep your mental wellness?
Good question. I'm really good with looking after everybody else's.
That's not uncommon for a lot of people, I think. You're sounding like a very normal person.
I have a lot of friends who tell me that I should probably take my own advice sometimes. But for me, it is about making sure that, you know, I know what my triggers are. And I know, even if I don't like to admit it, when I'm kind of going up and down. Having that awareness definitely helps, and that came from years of therapy of knowing how to manage it all. So I manage how I'm going. If I'm starting to kind of crash, then I will do things to counter that, and that might be just pulling back a little bit sometimes when I remember to, but also making sure that I've got good routines set up. Don't have great routines at the moment, but I'm getting them set back up. Of just making sure I'm getting out of the house, or you know, doing a bit of exercise and not sitting in my room, and that I'm not giving into not so much emotional eating as what I do, but just, you know, diet starts to change, and you know that diet has such an impact on the rest of the body that if you're not feeding it the right things, then it can't really function that well. So they're the typical things that people say and do is, you know, diet, exercise, lifestyle, making sure that you're monitoring and what's going on. But I think the thing we don't talk about, and I do more of, is managing things like the inner critic, who is usually responsible for a lot of the bad things.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And if you can learn how to manage the inner critic and talk back to it and control it, it makes things a lot easier. And I have a couple of different strategies. That voice starts, and it's nothing more than a Twitter troll. That tells you everything that's horrible about yourself and tries to make you believe that you are all these horrible things, and you're just not.
I often have the metaphor of the inner critic being almost like a bad Vegas magician who uses misdirection to, you know, magically make your confidence disappear. And it's really true, because, you know, this kind of stuff that we get in our own head about is not true. It's just the meaning we've made out of a situation. And it can so easily have you just questioning and doubting everything when others are not even perceiving it as that. It's just our reality that we've made out of that meaning.
Yeah, exactly. And unless you're actually talking to people, and that's where it's so important, that even if your friends aren't necessarily reaching out, because it's very easy for, you know, people to not notice what's going on, and also become really good at hiding it with a bit of experience. But talking to professionals or any of the services or friends about what's going on in your head is a really good way to counter it, because you just get a reality check, which is, you know, what it's all about. And that's one of the ways I kind of manage it. You know, if the inner critic's telling me that I'm like fat and ugly and, you know, stupid, and I don't know why I think that I can do some of the things that I do, you know, I'm lucky I can kind of, because I have so many different things that I do, on the modeling side of things, I can kind of point and go, oh, yeah, well, if I'm fat and ugly and dumb, why am I on a billboard like this? Or how did I get this? And it's kind of going back and going, well, no, here's evidence that I'm not what you're telling me. Or if I'm kind of stupid, how is it that I'm able to do this? So it's kind of being able to objectively question it.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes it's also just letting it go. Sometimes there's a game that I play, and I just call it like 10 seconds of hell, mm-hmm. where it's like for 10 seconds, your inner critic is allowed to tell you every horrible thing that is going to find. And then in that, after that 10 seconds, it just has to go.
Yeah.
And it's taken a lot of practice for me to learn how to do that, but it's just like, yep, cool, go for your life. But then you have to shut up.
Yeah.
And that one's quite effective. And one of the other ones is when you're really busy and caught in something and that, you know, inner critic's telling you that you can't do it. I kind of think if you are deeply interested in something, you might not answer calls from your friends or texts or respond to messages. So I'm kind of like, if you're that interested in it and that embedded in it, why the hell are you picking up the calls to your inner critic? So it's kind of the same sort of thing of, yeah, okay, you can go to message bank, I'll deal with you later.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to shift it. But I think that's one of the most important ones. Like diet, exercise, everything else is good. But
yeah.
If you can learn how to manage that voice, it gives you a lot of power.
How often have you...
And I think also...
Oh, sorry, go on.
No, go.
I was about to say, how often had you had conversations with people and really picked up on their inner critic speaking to you instead of... Do you get what I mean in that sense?
Yeah. Sometimes it's really easy. I mean, self-deprecating humour is really easy one to pick up.
Humour's the ultimate defence mechanism, really. Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's what I use. So I know that voice and I know why it's being done. So that's one way to pick it up. It could be even, you know, it's little things like, you know, when somebody's written something or done something, or you give somebody a compliment and they deflect it, or they're like, I'm really happy with this piece of writing that I did, but you know, I think it could just be a little bit like, no, you're really happy with this thing that you've done. And that's sort of where it should stop. But it's little like that when you, it's the, I'm really happy with, but, or, you know,
it's almost that perfectionism coming out. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. That tells you that whatever you've done just isn't quite good enough.
Yeah.
I had a friend years and years ago when I worked in hospitality, and he asked me what I did, and I said, oh, you know, I'm just a waiter. He's actually the ones that changed one of my perspectives on it. And he said to me, you're not just anything. Like, you know, even a restaurant, it would not be able to operate without people like waiters running the food out, taking people's orders. So it's actually a really important thing in that environment. So you're not just anything. And if you can remove that word
mm-hmm.
out of certain situations, like I've pulled people up on it before, you know, I just work in a call center, or I just study, or you know, I'm just this. I'm like, well,
it's such a limiting word, isn't it? It's it's labeling at its finest.
Yeah. And we don't realize that we do it because it's so embedded in our language.
Mm.
But if you can question things like that, then you start changing your own perspectives.
Yeah.
I think
What kind of impact has Are You Okay Day had on the LGBT community?
We started doing more and more work in LGBT over the last couple of years. So this year was the second year
mm-hmm.
that Are You Okay had been involved in Mardi Gras. And we now have a program called Listen for Love, which is a collection of stories and resources and things to help that are specifically to the LGBT community. So there's one story of a trans woman and her struggles with mental health and suicide, and stories from lesbians and gays and people from all different parts of the community, so that, you know, people can go there and there's someone like them that they can relate to, and it's not the one story.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a lot of resources along that that cater to some of the specific issues that that we have as LGBTs, either coming out or bullying or some of the things that we tell ourselves from growing up or that we hide away from, and how to relearn better behaviours. So there's those sort of resources, plus just being very vocal and getting out in the community through being part of Mardi Gras and Fair Day this year. We've done a little bit of work with gay media as well to get the messages out. And then I am just a loudmouth on social myself. Sharing the messages and also just talking to people when they need it. And I think it's those little things, more than the big campaigns and the big events. It's those little things of actually being there to talk and help that I think are really valuable.
Brilliant. And if people wanted to have a look at your blog that you were mentioning earlier, how can they find that?
Craig on Toast is my blog. That's my blog, my Twitter, Insta, and everything else. And on there, I think that one of the most valuable things from a mental health perspective is my story on there and why. I got involved with Are You Okay? But there's also a list of mental health organisations that cater to all different things that I'm kind of slowly building that a lot of people have used and found really helpful. And I sort of built that because I went looking for something like it and couldn't find it. There were lots of different lists, but they either weren't detailed enough. So there were organizations, but I didn't know what they were about.
Yeah.
Or they weren't the right organizations, or they weren't the right mix. So that's why I went and built one myself.
Brilliant.
That's very helpful.
Look, thank you so much for your time today and for giving us some insight, because I know that there are a lot of people out there who love their friends, love their family, love their LGBT community, but who are probably going to be very afraid to just put themselves out there and ask if someone's okay, if they suspect they are, and to at least have a few ideas there about how to handle those conversations and how to to be there and supportive without necessarily trying to give them advice that may not be wanted needed or appropriate. is absolutely brilliant, and I think that hopefully anyone that's listening to this podcast today is going to walk away feeling a little bit more armed and ready to have these conversations, not just in September on Are You Okay Day, but on any given day when they see any of their friends are struggling or acting a little bit out of the normal.
I mean that tagline's true, that every day is a great day to have a conversation that can change a life. And they don't have to be hardcore conversations, and they are really important.
Yeah, and I know it's scary for people, but if they can just find that that courage to just ask that question and to be there for that person, hopefully that person turns around and says, I'm absolutely fine, I'm just having a bad hair day or a really crap week. But, imagine the difference you're going to make if they turn around and say, actually, I'm really struggling and no one else has asked, and thank you for asking.
Yeah, and suddenly you've started to break down that loneliness, and suddenly the inner critic has just been proven wrong. You have a friend, you're not alone.
Yeah.
That in itself is extremely powerful.
Yeah, the more you can challenge and confront your own inner critic, and if you can spot it in others and empathetically challenge and confront theirs, the more we can actually start to see things as they really are. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
Brilliant. Thanks so much, Craig, and wish you all the best.
Thank you.